So is this okay? The record? Sure. Everything's recording? Okay, let me find a nice spot for it.
Okay. So we're here today on April 16th at about 1 o'clock. Is it right now? And I'm meeting here with Mrs. Feldman and Mrs. Campbell. And so basically what I just would like to hear from you is to tell me about your life. Tell me about your life story, where you were born, where you grew up, your experiences.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I saw you were going to talk about my grandpa.
I want to get kind of your life story first, and then we'll go into your grandpa.
For me, oh my goodness. Well, I was born in Wiesbaden, Germany. My father was an American. I mean, he a German-American. At that time, the second-hand Americans, if they went back to their home country, they had to come back to the States to renew their citizenship, right? Mm-hmm. Every 2 years. Right? Well, anyhow, I was born in the middle of World War I, which is, nobody here knows, but anyhow, it's 1916. And so the Americans during World War I were advised to either go home, to go home. So my father left Wiesbaden and came to Switzerland, and from there, he tried to get tickets for the family. I had an older sister. But then the U-boats came up and sank all those ships, and Father decided it would be better to stay put in Switzerland. So after living in Switzerland for 12 years, we became Swiss citizens.
What year did you become a Swiss citizen?
That was in 29.
29, okay.
Right. And the same year my father died in December 1st.
Did he get sick before, when you were in Germany, Mom? Or did he just get sick when you were in Switzerland? Mom, when did your dad get sick?
Oh, he was sick all. Oh, long time ago. He came, my grandfather sent his son, after he graduated from gymnasium, he sent him to the United States because he had visited the United States and saw the possibilities. And he didn't want him to serve in the military for Kaiser Wilhelm. So he sent them off.
That's Joseph Dietzken, right?
Yeah. My father's name is Eugene Dietzken.
Joseph is your
And he was 19 when he arrived in New York. And he worked for Keufel and Esser, which is a drafting and drawing instrument outfit run by Germans. There were lots of Germans there.
What city was this in?
Keufel and Esser.
In New York, right?
New York, okay.
Yeah. And I have all the letters that my grandfather wrote to his son in New York. And it came out, it's all in German, but it's typed. So you can read it.
I know a little German, yeah.
It's not in that beautiful longhand German, is what my mom's
no.
saying.
Oh.
So it's actually easier to read for Americans. But then how did he get to Chicago?
Yeah, so father went to Chicago, right? And he started, well, he married. And he started his own company. And that factory in Chicago is a historical monument right now. They can't tear it down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He was a socialist, And he was one of the first to look out for his workers. He had some restrooms for the ladies, and they had their bed days and so on. And he had flowers on the windowsills, cheer things up.
Really get the workers' attitude going.
Well, my father. But he had TB, my dad.
TB?
Yeah.
Tuberculosis? Oh, okay.
So at that time, they went to Europe at that point. And he had been married, but his wife couldn't have children. So he wanted some heirs for his business he built up. So that's why he went back to Germany first, and where he met Mother. And they got married. And then came the World War I, and they went to Switzerland, became Swiss. By that time, there were three boys and three girls in the family. And we all grew up in Switzerland.
When did you move to the States?
Zurich.
Yeah. When did you move to the United States?
Oh, myself?
Yeah.
In 46.
In 46.
Right after the World War II.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you know about your grandfather, Joseph?
My what?
Your grandfather, Joseph. What do you know about him?
Well, I find out there were three sons in the family. Two of them stayed in Germany and one moved to Hungary, Budapest. And there should be some Dietzken in Budapest. Well, maybe. Anyhow, I never got there. And my mother, during World War I, my father's company didn't get any U.S. contracts because he was living in Germany, you see. Yeah. And my mother knew that all. And so my three brothers she sent to the United States. And my sister had come ahead of him already.
To go to school. They went to the university, but they also went...
Well, first they went to a prep school. They didn't speak English, let's face it. They had a hard time. And one, my oldest brother went to MIT, and Eugene went to the one in Illinois, in Evanston. What is it, Northwestern?
Yeah.
Northwestern, yeah.
And Walter went to Harvard.
Mm.
But Mom, what do you know about Josef Dietzken?
Josef Dietzken, I can't
go back to Josef Dietzken.
Okay. Josef Dietzken. Well, he inherited a tannery in Siegburg. Yeah, that's where my father was born too. It's close to Köln, at the Rhine. Yeah. He did very well, and he was a philosopher. And Karl Marx came to visit him. And he was in contact with all the socialists in Germany, Austria, and so on. And so he was traveling a lot. And his wife really ran the business. And his articles and so on couldn't be published in Germany, so he sent them to Switzerland to the Neue Zürcher Zeitung. That's where they have them. Mm-hmm. And as he had his son then established in the United States, he went over there with his two daughters and the younger brother. They all went to Chicago. That's where they lived. And my grandfather ran for office in Chicago. I can't tell you what the...
You don't know what that
is. But he never won. But he died when he was 60. Already, yeah.
And do you know about his...
And he's buried in Chicago at the Waldheim Cemetery. Next to Anna Goodman, I think it is. She was quite famous in the American Socialist.
Yeah. How about the German 48ers. You know about how Joseph was a member of the 1848 revolution?
Mom?
Yeah.
Do you know about the 1848 revolution that they call?
Oh, yeah, right. Our father was born in 62, and grandfather, I have it.
And Mom, didn't he go to Russia too? Didn't he work for the Tsar?
Oh yeah, while he was still living in Germany. He had a new type of tannery, and the Tsar needed, so he was called to St. Petersburg. And father went to school there for a while. He spoke Russian too. Mm. Yeah.
But the Tsar didn't like him.
No, grandfather did not like it, what was happening in Russia.
What didn't he like?
So he went back to Germany.
What didn't he like, Mom?
Philosophy about socialism.
Oh, okay. He didn't like the socialism that was in Russia?
This is before. This is when the Tsar was in power.
Yeah.
And I thought the Tsar fired him. No?
Say what?
I thought the Tsar fired him.
Oh, yeah. Well, he quit. Yeah. His oldest daughter was married to another German, Neumann, and he stayed in Russia.
Okay. How well did you know your grandfather? How well did you know your grandfather? Did you know him personally?
Oh, no, heavens.
No? Just what your father told you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Our father used to try and tell us.
Was there anything specific that your father told you about him that stood out for you? A quality that you liked about your grandfather?
Well, that he really studied this socialism, and he was for the workers, trying to help them to improve, and he was very much involved in that, in the political. But in Germany itself he had no anyway. He had a name, and I remember he was writing to all this whole correspondence, and we had in Zurich a big room with like a library, and all those books on Kautsky. Are you familiar with that name?
Say the name.
Kautsky. He was a big socialist in Vienna. Mm. He had three sons. And one of the sons was in concentration camp. And after he was released, he came to visit me and helped me sort out all the books father had, a whole library. And he sorted them all out for me, and we gave them to the University of Zurich.
Oh, good. Yeah.
And what happened then with Kautsky? Didn't he...
Oh. Yeah, he became president of Austria.
Oh, okay.
His son. Yeah.
What year was that?
Well, that must have been. He came to see me in 45. The war was over 46. It was shortly after. It must have been close to 46.
Okay.
He came to visit.
Okay.
And. We talked a lot about all what to do with all those books.
Yeah. Did you ever read any of them?
My brothers. And I have one nephew who is very interested in our history. But I was looking for his address. I don't find it. But I have the address of Charlie Ditzken. He is a lawyer in New York. He was in one of the trade building when it was bombed.
Oh, yeah.
he got out. Yeah.
Which train?
The World Trade Center.
He
had his
own. But Mom, talk about, wasn't there something about your grandfather's travels in the United States? Didn't he travel around the United States?
Oh, a lot, yeah. Yeah.
It was during the Civil War, wasn't it?
The Civil War, yeah, right. He traveled.
Do you remember what he did?
Yeah, where did he go? He went into the South, too, didn't he?
He traveled as far as he could. He was like a bomb, was a little thing. Well, mostly walking, catching the train, if there was a train.
Do you know if he took a side in the Civil War? Was he on the northern side or the southern side?
He writes in his letters to Father about it, what happened when he saw the people dangling from the trees.
The lynches.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Did he take a side in the Civil War?
Oh, probably, but I couldn't tell you.
Do you think that he was against the idea of slavery? Because he was a socialist?
Your father published those letters, shortened edition in English, and those books must be, I think my brothers must have. But they all passed away, and I kind of lost track there. My mom had 26 grandchildren, so it's kind of hard to find where is what. And I wish I could tell you more, but I don't want to tell you fairy tales.
How did your father start his company? How did your father start his company?
When he married this Anna Marie, I trying to remember her last name. She started, grandfather, he wanted him really to go and open a pharmacy, a drugstore.
Your grandfather?
He suggested that to father. And it didn't help. It didn't hurt to use his wife's inheritance or whatever to start the company.
I blow it.
There we go.
They
come in handy one time. Never mind that.
You and your father's relationship after the war? What did you and your family do immediately after World War II?
After World War II?
Okay.
Well, he died in 29.
Oh, okay.
You see, way before, yeah. And mother, that was it. My older sister, she was one step ahead of me, right? She was sent to the French-speaking part of Switzerland to learn French first. That was how it went. The next year, she went to England to learn English. Right? The next year, she went to the United States and worked in the Dietzken Company. And I was supposed to follow this. I went to French part, I went to England, and then came home, and I told mother, I'm not going with her to the United States. I stay right here. And mother was kind of happy about it, I think.
Well, my mom, too, is the only one of her family who stayed in Switzerland during World War II, because her mother knew, you know, because of this, as my mom calls it, the second-class American citizens, if you were a naturalized citizen, you know, you had your home country, and you went back to the home country, you had to come back to the United States every 2 years to retain your American citizenship. So they were worried about what would happen to the Dietzken company if they stayed in Switzerland during World War II. Mm. So they actually left, like in the movie Casablanca, they had to travel, where did they go? To Portugal, right? Your mom and Hilda.
Oh, yeah.
They went to Portugal and they had to catch this
last plane out. Clip.
How long were they in Portugal?
Oh, about 2 months at least.
Mm. And they sewed the gold coins in the, right? Didn't they put their money in the clothes and everything?
Yeah. Do you remember what year that was?
What year, Mom?
Oh, that was shortly after the war started. Started in 39, I think, and they left in 40. I remember I went with them to Geneva, and I was in Swiss military service. I couldn't leave. I was very patriotic.
Just the Swiss.
So, from Geneva they took a bus to Barcelona, and from Barcelona they went to Lisbon, and they had tickets for the Clipper. But there was so much traffic at that time with the military, and so they were always put back. So at long last they made it.
And you stayed back in Switzerland.
I stayed back.
And my mom was married to our dad and had 2 children by that time, right?
By that time, well, as soon as I got married, no more military service for the girls.
So it was after that then.
When did you get married?
Yeah, after that.
What year did you get married?
40.
40, okay.
Yeah. All this came together. Well, there was that big, enormous house, and I'm rattling around in there. So my husband was a pilot. He flew Messerschmitts. Switzerland had bought 50 Messerschmitts to patrol their frontiers.
And there are a number of skirmish dogfights that they had with the Germans. The Germans
made
a mistake of selling them the Messerschmitts before the war. And there's a whole book about it, about the Swiss military during World War II, because the Germans constantly tested the borders. You know, they wanted to take Switzerland, but they knew it would be an enormous hassle, you know, like Afghanistan, you know.
I mean, because mountains,
yeah, all the mountains. And the Swiss are a militia, so every male, when they turn 18, is in the militia. You go to the military, period. You can pay a lot of money if you're somehow disabled, but you have to be really disabled. And then you get a rifle. You have it in your closet at home, so everybody is armed, and they have tunnels in the Alps where they had the runways, and they still do to this day. They're totally prepared. I mean, and so it was just not worth it to the Germans.
Yeah, and I was very proud of her son, who is graduating from Annapolis, and refused to give up his Swiss citizenship.
Well, congratulations.
So the Swiss, our dad always said that the Swiss way of taking over the world is that the Swiss, you cannot get rid of your Swiss citizenship unless you actually actively declare you are totally anti, you know, you have to get out of it. But so even though I'm an American, I was the first one born here after
he gave her a good Swiss name.
Right. So I could get Swiss citizenship before I turned 18. I had to write the consulate in L.A. and ask to keep it. And then before I got married, I had to ask the same thing. They posted the bans in my parents' hometowns. But luckily, I didn't have children until I was quite elderly parent, as I call it. And the year before I had our first son, they changed the ruling. They used to say only the Swiss citizenship could come through the male, so the father, but they changed it the year before so it can go through the mother, so I could give our boy Swiss citizenship. Mm. But it's dual citizenship. There's few countries that allow that. Mm. I think I don't know what the others are. But anyway, he's at the Naval Academy. And when he, there's his picture. When he, you know, they don't look very happy about that. You know, they don't like that. And they try to convince him to threaten him and stuff. But he signed a paper that said he'll give it up when we go to war with Switzerland. Hmm. Right? And the Swiss Air Force attacks the United States. So I always say to him, hey, when you after you finish your commitments to the United States, you can go to Switzerland and become the chief of naval operations for Switzerland, right? Lake Geneva, Lake Como. That would be nice.
When you and
dancing
Doc,
every afternoon, tea dances.
When yeah. you and Doc traveled to Moscow.
Yeah, I should tell
and
you
they
that
mentioned
story.
My grandfather's name. And the red carpet was rolled out.
For him in Russia?
Well, we were living in Beirut, and we were working for the UN, and we were demonstrating this hydroponic greenhouse farming there. And it was right after Nixon's first open trade with the Soviet Union. It was a big deal. It was in the early 70s. I think it was 73 or 74, and this was the first trade fair after he announced this new relationships with the Soviet Union, and we were asked to go to Moscow to show this a model greenhouse, to set it up and demonstrate it to our trade fair, and it was just by chance, it was under the auspices of a Swiss company. The Swiss have always had this relationship with the Soviet Union, with Russia. And so it was a trade company that was representing, like a Belgian paper box company, French tractors, British farm equipment, you know, all kinds of things like that. And we and the Rainbird Corporation, which makes the sprinklers, those, they were asked to come, and we were asked to come, and we were the first Americans who were in Moscow for actual trade. It was a really incredible situation. I was extremely young. My husband was extremely young. And it was really interesting. The in fact, my husband's down in China for our company, and it's in a way it's similar. People would actually come through the exhibit, come through our little greenhouse. We had just a small greenhouse, and they would come through. They'd do this to me. They'd feel the top of my head, and you know what they'd say to me? They are looking for my horns. They were looking for my horns because Americans are devils. Oh. Yes, and they actually did that. Wow. Blew our mind. People would come through with little notebooks, and one person would draw carefully a Phillips screw. And then another person would come and do a gasket. And they were taking them back to copy them, you know, like we were like, go ahead, you know, good luck, or you get glass, you know. But it was weird because we were in this hotel in Moscow, which is the largest hotel in the world at the time. It was huge. And it was really kind of weird because you knew everything in it was bugged. Everything. We would go in the bathroom like James Bond or something and like turn the faucets all on and try to talk together like, whoa, you know, is this weird? But God, we flew on Aeroflot. Boy, that was an incredible airline. I mean, that's like a stripped down fuselage. It's a military plane. They convert to passengers, and there's like jump seats in them, you know, that flop down. You know, you have to put them back.
Not in real seats.
There's no stewardess. There's no water. There's no bathroom. You just stop here and there between. We flew from Beirut to Moscow, and we stopped in a few Arabic countries on the way, but like unscheduled stops, you know, and like. And then here's all these Arabic students going to study there and things, and they would bring aboard, or people going home, they'd bring aboard just like carry on. I mean, like to fill this room, you know, stuffing it, stuffed animals and things just everywhere. It's just like, But the Swiss company was used to doing business there, and with the kind of intermediary bureaucrats you can imagine in the Soviet Union at the time, was just incredible. They would entertain them, and they brought cases and cases. One of the favorite things of the Soviet bureaucrats was to drink foreign liquor, and they loved it. And then it was all these cigarettes you get. You get gifts like crazy, cigarettes, pens, all kinds of gadgets, watches, all kinds of things. But it depended what rank the people were in. And so we would be trotted out to go to these meetings. We had this translator, and then we would talk with people. And we got into, it was right in the middle, of course, of the Vietnam War. And we were sitting in this one meeting, you know, the Swiss were trying to sell these greenhouses, right, we are too, you know, of course. But the head of the Soviet fellow, finally we got to this kind of echelon of Soviets. Anyway, and he proposed a toast to the blood of the North Vietnamese people. And there we are, you know, we're Americans. We said, well, okay, we'll drink to that. We'll drink to that. And then we said, okay, then we stood up, my husband stood up and said, I propose a toast to the Hungarian martyrs. Whoa, you should have seen them. It was like this, like, scene. It was like dead silence. The Swiss were like, oh God, no, I don't think we're selling anything now. You know, like, oh God, you know, like we thought, oh, we're going to make it back to Beirut. You know, Beirut was even safe after this. And so then I stood up and I said, I'd like to propose a toast to my great-grandfather, Josef Dietzke, you know, and it was like dead silence, and they were like, and then they stopped everything, they ran out, we're drinking Courvoisier, you know, the Swiss had brought cases of it, you know, anyway, so they went running out, they came back, like, with this guy, like, out of central casting, an academician, they called him. He had this huge head, this big beard and everything, and he carried this enormous encyclopedia, and he laid it down on the table, you know, in Cyrillic, you know, and he's looking through it, and he goes, Josef Dietzke, and there were pages and pages and pages, and he's like reading this stuff, and they were all talking, they were all, then they ran out, and they brought back gold goblets, I kid you not, gold goblets.
Like a cup?
Yes. With jewels on them, you know, that incredible Russian, incredible stuff. And they brought out this fabulous vodka, they filled them all, and we all had to, like, drink. And then we went out dancing every night. We went, we got the tour of everything because of Josef Dietzke. You know, I said he was a tanner here in Moscow. And they were like, it was okay about the Hungarians. Yeah.
You know, then Josef Dietzke actually has a lot of background to the Soviet Union and the Soviet politics. That's most likely why they were so enthusiastic.
They were totally freaked out that I was there, this American.
They probably were shocked.
And they were like blown, you know. Yeah, and we had a great time then, and it was fine. You know, we knew that, you know, that it was not personal. I mean, this political thing, you know, but like, whoa, it was a weird experience. And that was the only time that, you know, I've ever heard of anyone who knew who Josef Dietzke was. And I just said it, you know, because it just came to me, because I was aware of it, because I'd heard my mom talk about her grandfather as, you know, growing up. So I knew he was in Moscow, and I wrote her letters before we went to, when we heard we were going, and I knew, you know, I was kind of thinking, oh, well, you know, my great-grandfather had been here and was interested in, you know, what he had done there. That's why I was, you know, it was on my mind we were there, but luckily I said it at the right time, but it was weird. But Mom, you have some material here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, let me get it.
Okay.
And my grandfather is mentioned in the German encyclopedia, the Große Brockhaus.
Okay, so here he is, and here's the stamps.
The East Germany came out with the stamp. Show him that.
Oh, and see, that's taken from the picture. Also? And then she's written this. And
are these all original photos as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then this.
I tried to.
is the photo that the stamp was taken from.
Hmm. Wow.
And look, this is from...
Oh, wow.
And where is this from, Mom? This looks like it's...
Well, it looks like it's
Her mom had this. So this came from their house in Zurich, right?
Yeah.
And then here is the crest of the brother
that
family.
Went to Hungary became a form, you know, it was...
Which, see, means nothing to an American. But what it is it's like you get a sir, like, you know, Sir Richard Branson or something, you know, Sir Paul McCartney. You know, you get knighted somehow. You're somehow...
I put one outside on my house.
Really?
People will think.
It's a big deal to Europeans.
Who does
here are the set of stamps with other... Socialists, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
And I went here to a coin and stamp shop. I said, do you by any chance have the stamp, right?
And they happen to have
it? In Germany? We don't deal with it in Germany. I said, I'm so sorry. But my friend went to, he knew, who was the president of East Germany after the war?
Walter, no, not Ulrich. Ulrich was later.
Yeah, I know.
He said, that guy owes me a favor. And he wrote to him. And I got a letter. I'm supposed to show up in Berlin to receive a block of 100 stamps. Oh, and wow. He wrote back that there was no such way I would come to Berlin. So they sent it to me, insured, and I had a half an hour with the postman until he released it to me. this is the große Brockhaus, and I wonder what, doesn't the university, the library have a lot of German books?
Oh yeah.
Wow. Would they
because
like to have those? I don't know what to do.
If she could give her books, German books, to the UCSB.
Oh, I'm sure they would. They would love it. Yeah.
I have the whole thing of Goethe and Schiller and so.
Yeah.
Oh, would you? Thank you.
Yeah.
This is in English.
Good.
Did you ever visit the East?
Mom, did you ever get to East Germany?
Or anywhere in the Soviet Union.
In the East? Did you ever go to the East?
To Berlin?
No. You mean after the war?
After World War II, yes.
After World War II? No.
No.
No,
we went there in 1936 when they had the Olympics. When Hitler got the Winter and the Summer Olympics.
We still wonder about that here.
I'm mad about that. Well, I'm still mad about we all went there because my husband was in the rowing team.
Oh, okay.
And they had come back from Henley. They beat everybody. And in the elimination rounds, Switzerland beat the German boat.
Oh,
and we
wow.
jumped up at her and they told us to sit down and shut up. But we were beat by the Americans.
Well, I bet the Germans didn't like that.
That didn't matter.
It didn't matter.
But, and we saw when they had the women's hurdle race, and they were way ahead, and Hitler was already standing up and shouting his glee, and the last poor girl dropped the baton. Oh! There was dead silence. Was she shot afterwards?
Probably.
Reprimanded.
Free steroids, too.
Oh, that was the highlight of the Olympics.
And then my mother's husband, my father, was in the Winter Olympics, too, and actually won some.
Oh, really?
And in the, you know, he had some medals.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, of Henley.
And in the Olympics, though.
Oh, yeah, well, they got the silver.
You got the silver medal?
For the rowing?
The eight boat.
Eight boat?
He's in Leni Riefenstahl's movie in the opening scenes. You know the movie?
Which movie?
Olympia.
I've never seen it.
Oh, you have to see that. How can you be a college student and not see that? Gee, I'm making sure our boys see all these things. Our youngest is going off to college this fall.
Mm-hmm.
We teach at USC, by the way.
Why do they make hooks so heavy?
Yeah, well, they get heavier.
It's like that.
Right here. Okay. It's at the bottom. There's other pictures.
On the left at the very end.
This one? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what to do about this. We should get it reframed and restored.
I understand minimal German.
Well, yeah, it's going to be hard for that. Oh, well, here's Josef Dietzgen, too.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah. Lots of photos.
1846. Wow.
The photo that... Actually, you know what? That photo looks like the photo that was rendered for the most popular website. Just seeing that one up there.
Oh, yeah, sure does. You're right. Absolutely does. God, and those eyes going down and away. Our older son has that. Isn't that interesting? Wow.
So during World War II, one brother was in the Navy, one was navigator
American.
In the bomber, and Eugene was in the army, but he was released. Mother was told he had a week long, so she pulled him out of there like that.
And my mother's young middle brother, Walter, was a navigator.
Navigator, yeah.
On the bombers
over 30 flights over Germany. And I hoped he would tell them to land in Germany.
Can you imagine?
He flew for the Germans? Or
Americans.
Was, Americans, okay.
In Switzerland.
They were all in school in the United States, and they all joined. And, you can imagine him being a navigator because, of course, they drove up. You explain about you had German francs, and you had to spend them in Germany, right? You had German money, Mom? Remember you talked about going and getting the books in Germany? When you were a kid, you used to drive to Germany.
The exchange of Swiss franc to German Reichsmark. The Swiss franc was high up. Mm-hmm. You could get it very cheap. And my mother's sister was still living in Hamburg, and she needed money. So we would smuggle. that money in the cars, right? We would drive to Germany, and then we could put it in the mail and send it. Mother was great in that. Oh, my son, Peter.
Hi,
I'm Josh.
John?
Josh,
happy to meet you.
Great to meet you.
Yeah.
Just talking about
you're talking about Josef Dietzgen, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. We're jogging Mom's memory.
So tell me about when you first moved to the United States.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay. My husband was going to finish his master's degree. He still had serving all this time during the war in the military. And I could sell the big house in Zurich. And so I had three children. And mother told me to come on over before him. He got so many offers to work here and there and someplace else. And so I flew from Dübendorf, Zurich, to Austria, to Amsterdam, Holland. And from Holland, I took the plane to New York.
Phil Spector?
That was from Amsterdam to New York, was 23 hours.
Oh, wow.
With three kids.
Wow. And this was in 46?
Thank heavens I had a friend of mine. Mother insisted I took somebody along. And she came along with me and helped me.
And this was in 46? 1946?
Yeah.
Okay.
46.
And so how long did you stay in New York?
In New York, I thought it would be nothing to get the tickets to fly to L.A. My mom lived in L.A. So we were stuck. It took us, I think we were 2 weeks we were in New York. Mm. My youngest brother was going to Harvard at the time. And so he helped us out. And I remember Peter, we had, they never seen black people. So all the waiters in that hotel were black. And they thought they were dirty, they would try and take it off. Embarrassing, but never mind, they laughed about it. So we made it to L.A. And there I stayed with mother. And it took my husband over a year to come. He finished his, he came by boat. So mother took care of all those kids. And I went to New York to meet him at the boat. And we bought a car, which was a hard thing to do after the war. Then, and we drove from New York to Los Angeles. And I thought it would never end.
Long drive. Long drive.
Hey, I'd like to do it.
There were no freeways. They didn't have roads back then.
Yeah. Nor really fast cars.
Through the fields.
Yeah, right.
No air conditioning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyhow.
Yeah, but a lot more interesting.
But I remember arriving in L.A. And it was in August. And it was over 100. We were not used to this kind of... Oh, my God.
Going from Switzerland to 100 degrees in Los Angeles.
And I wanted, after 2 days in L.A., I wanted to go home.
Did you stay in L.A. permanently then?
We stayed in... Yeah. And then we went as soon as my husband came. We looked for a house. And we drove all over. And we saw that house on a Saturday afternoon in the Pacific Palisades. Are you familiar with that area? Well, it was right above the Bel Air Bay Club.
It's right over Pacific Coast Highway, right above on the bluffs above, and it looks out over the ocean. So there's this beautiful beach below it. And at that time, I mean, it was probably 10 cars a night that went by on Pacific Coast Highway.
It was about 30 steps down to the house. The garage was up at the street. Then we went down.
Nobody wanted to buy the house because it was...
On Sunday, we went back and bought that thing. There was no question in my mind.
I say it was probably like 24 feet or so below.
You could hear the surf.
Right? So they didn't care. They just walked up and down. They were used to that from Switzerland. They didn't.
But most people didn't.
Most people wouldn't do it. Yeah. So it was a cool house that way. And it was like, right there. It's like living here on the Mesa or something. Right there. Except there's the road below. But... So it was nice. So for them, it was incredible.
I didn't mind going up and down.
But
I kept us in shape, anyhow.
Yeah.
We had the badminton court, and Anthony Quinn lived about 3 houses from us.
Oh, really?
And he used to come around and pick up the older kids, and they went underneath the free highway. Down a big... drainage thing or whatever, they didn't have to cross, so he would have fun with all the kids and doing his exercises down at the beach.
What a life.
Yeah, seriously, sounds like California.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and his son was a juvenile delinquent, Duncan. Oh,
and
man,
the oldest
black
girl,
leather jacket, the whole 9 yards.
When she had to start nursery, not nursery school, kindergarten. At home, we don't send them to kindergarten. I mean, first grade is early enough. So she, I brought her, and you gave them a snack along, right? And then when I picked her up, she was crying. Somebody stole her snack. So I said, oh, let's forget that. You're not going to kindergarten. You can play with the rest of them. They never came to inquire what happened to that child. Not funny. Here they have to go.
You mean the kindergarten?
Yeah.
They had to go?
No, he's saying, so? Well, my mom's saying that you have to go here. Well, normally you go, right.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, strange things.
Oh. Wow, this is fascinating.
Oh, what Peter... You better not talk about
that. No, don't. Especially when he's sitting right here. He just happens to be in town. He lives in Los Olivos, but he was just interviewed at UCSB.
Oh, really?
And I couldn't find that radio station.
Oh, well.
On the radio. What is the radio station? UCSB.
I don't know. There's another radio around here. I don't know.
I love 91.1. I had it on there, and it was like...
That's all right. I'll be on again next week. I'm plugging a show I'm doing. So.
Oh, good. He's a musician.
Oh, really? What do you play?
Banjo and fiddle and guitar and whatever, bluegrass and old-time music. And
cool. That's what my dad likes to play.
Yeah, well.
Losing money hand over foot, but having a good time.
You want something to drink? Like
water.
Use
a martini.
Like water. God,
have some apple juice.
I'm sort of curious as to what you found out about Josef Dietzken and.
Well, actually, what I'm kind of doing here, Professor Marcuse, I believe, is doing some background research on Josef Dietzken and the kind of history of Marxism. So, what I was really trying to do here was just kind of get the background life story.
Yeah.
And your relationship to your grandfather, and you pretty much established that. So it's not necessarily 100% about Josef Dietzken yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping that if you're willing, and if you guys are willing, that in the future we might do another interview,
yeah.
Maybe look more into the documents, actually scan some of them in, and then we can...
Mm-hmm. That's the one that you probably would be interested in. That's the book of letters.
All the letters that grandfather wrote to.
So it's...
Yes, this would definitely be...
See, that's the real stuff.
Yeah, these are all primary sources.
Yeah. And I don't know who else would even have that.
I think Fossil typed the whole thing.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Look at it, it's a mimeographed.
And that was translated into English. It came out in England.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in book form. But I don't have one. But
so this has actually been published?
But Charlie...
And she said that excerpts were published, not the whole thing.
I couldn't find a plain piece of paper in this house.
You should have told me.
It's crazy.
Do you need a piece of paper?
I blame it on Claudia. She takes hold of my... But I have this Charlie, who is a lawyer in New York. He has all the addresses and things of the rest of them. And the Tony Dietzken, Sepp's son, he is the one that's interested in the old times. So he would know more than I do, hopefully. You know, Sepp. But he wrote to me once and said, you know, my father, he likes to tell stories. You never know if they're true or So I'm asking you, look at this and see if it's... Oh, sure, it was all in his head.
Yeah.
Well, that book, it seems to me, is the most valuable thing because it has this primary information. But, you know, since he wrote them to his son, who was in the United States, he urged his son to go to, you know, so he'd been in Russia.
Maybe Peggy, I have to get in touch with Peggy and see if she knows what happened to that.
Ask,
those books.
Yeah, Mom, that would be good. That would
can translate this. Good luck.
Take a long time.
There's a lot of stuff in there.
A real German speaker.
That's family affairs. All about the pelts and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What is?
That.
In there?
Yeah.
In there, Mom?
Yeah. How tannery works.
Oh.
How they, it's a very stinky business.
Yes.
So he talks about his personal business and everything?
Yeah, right.
But he must have wrote to his son about his ideas too, no?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And your father was very proud of his father, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he never got much sleep, my father always said. There was Grandpa standing over me. I had to take dictation to write all the things. Yeah.
You mean your father took dictation from his father?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Was he the oldest?
No, Gretchen was the oldest, the girl.
Oh. Like
whose name, she married a guy named Neumann. Yeah.
Ah.
And then was father, and then was Tante Paula and Tante Anna, and my Uncle Josef.
And Uncle Josef was kind of a...
A playboy.
Playboy,
he was a top salesman of the Ditzke Company. At that time, you went to the best hotel in that city or town or... And you put out your wares and they came to you to see what they want to order. It was a marvelous job and he was great at it.
Yeah, these days it's called a hospitality suite.
Yeah.
Where a vendor would go and take a hotel room or a suite and put out products and advertise the fact that he was going to be there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what it is, the Company.
And
Quinkle and Esser is the same thing. It's drafting instruments and papers for architects and engineers.
Is it still around today?
Yes, but it was bought by another big company, and you can still find Dietzkin products, though. I mean, I'm an architect. I have a bunch of his, you know, I always look for it. And they're beautiful instruments and things, but it's not the same, you know, of course, you know. But my mom has some original catalogs and things. I have a few things like that, too, that I've picked up over the years. I'm sure Peter does, too.
I still have my slide rule.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I never want to have to use that again.
BC, before calculators.
Yeah, I mean, God, I hated that stuff.
If you go on eBay, you'll see Dietzkin slide rules. They're collector's items.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
They're made from ivory and rosewood and so on, so they're very...
Oh, wow.
Very beautifully manufactured and so on, but, you know, they're only accurate to three decimal places, or three places, one way or the other, so...
Well, let me tell you, for architecture, that's good enough.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a, you know, 200-story building or something, then when you're off by the extra decimal place, you're in trouble, you know, when you reach the top. But let me tell you.
How did your radio thing go?
Oh, it went fine. Fine. I just kept saying the same thing. You know, when you're plugging a performance, you just have to make sure people are going to listen. And I talked a little bit about the music, so.
When is your Lobero thing?
Here, I'll give you a flyer.
In April, sir?
Yeah,
so
we come Thursday.
Where are you from?
Oh,
I'm from San Diego.
Oh. And what year are you?
I'm a senior. I'm about to graduate. I'm going on to grad school in Cal Poly.
Oh, you are? And what's your major?
History.
Oh, really?
Ah.
20th century history.
Wow, good for you. Far out.
Specifically German history.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, that's why Mark Hughes sent me an email and contacted me about doing this.
Cool.
And I brought you this. You might want.
And have you been to Germany?
Read that.
Oh no, I really want.
You have to go because
I've pretty much been in school right out of high school, even all my summers. Haven't had any bit off.
Anything, so. It's hard. Yeah,
good luck with your research.
Yeah, it's expensive. Yeah,
and then I'll see you later.
Yeah, bye. Yeah, I know. Yeah, we're sending our son back east, and our younger son. We're already kind of like. Well, I guess we'll be parsing out the beans over the next 4 years, you know. Well, probably four more after that, you know.
God.
It's horrible. Oh, Cal Poly, entry. Cal Poly, San Luis.
No, Cal Poly, Pomona. The south,
oh, really?
Yeah, southern one.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And my girlfriend is going to UC Irvine for chemistry.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, they have an incredible chemistry department.
Yeah,
so I didn't know that. So Cal Poly has a good history department?
Cal Poly Pomona, their history department is only 5 years old, but from what I found, they have a pretty good department.
Good.
They have a good listing of German 20th century professors, so.
Oh, good.
It's probably who I'd be working with.
Yeah, yeah. We're working on Mount San Antonio College, which is right over the hill from Cal Poly. It's a community college, mostly commuter, yeah. That's interesting. And my husband and I both went to the Claremont Colleges out there.
Mm. Yeah, I went to, what was it called? Maricosta College in San Diego and Santa Barbara City College, and then I transferred to
Good for
UC.
You. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a long slog for everybody. You know?
Yeah, it was a long slog.
That's why I decided, yes, we will go through with this small liberal arts college to get our son through, you know. That's why our older son went to the Naval Academy, you know, they pay him.
Yeah.
But then you have a commitment after.
That's what my dad tried to get me to do, because my dad went to the Naval Academy.
Oh, he did?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? Yeah, sure, San Diego.
Yeah, he served in the submarine service for 9.5 years.
Wow. Well, our son is going to flight training school. He'll have to report about 3 weeks after he graduates.
Well, that'll be fun, get to fly airplane.
Yeah, he's already learning. He's getting the little single engine license while he's at the academy. Everyone has to go before they go to Pensacola, Florida to learn how to fly.
It's going to be more fun than sitting in a room that's all dark.
Yeah, I know. He keeps his eye on that. That's what he wants to do. So that's what, you know, our younger son almost did it. They wanted to have him. But
there is a picture of